They march on, slowly, deliberately, desperate to reach a welcoming host nation in Europe. Tens of thousands of refugees are on the move from Syria and beyond, fleeing poverty and persecution. Over the weekend, some 20,000 migrants made their way to Germany from Hungary by train, bus and on foot. Chancellor Angela Merkel described the events of the past few days as breathtaking and tried to reassure German citizens that the crisis was manageable.
What we are experiencing now will occupy and change our country over the coming years. And we want to see that it changes it for the better. And we believe that we can do that.
But countries neighbouring Syria are finding the crisis increasingly hard to cope with. It's not surprising when you realise the scale of the humanitarian crisis. Jordan, Lebanon and Turkey have between them taken in almost 4 million refugees. The huge pressure they're under is the focus of a conference at the Centre for Mediterranean Integration in Marseille, France today. Sahadin Al-Bashir is chairman of a charity that provides legal assistance to refugees in Jordan.
Proportionally, what we're seeing, Jordan has received about 1.5 million Syrian refugees. That's 25% of our population. It's like asking Europe to take 150 million refugees. Jordan has done its share. And therefore, what we need to instill is a change in the narrative and the discourse from the obligations of host countries towards refugees to the international obligation to assist in the responsibility of taking care of refugees.
So at the conference, are you appealing for more aid for Jordan to help cope with the 1.5 million refugees you have?
Indeed, that is one of the requests, but also, and we're demanding rather than requesting, that actually the world bears this responsibility with us financially and also otherwise. And immigration policies also in the world have to reflect the ability to ease in the burden that's being thrown on neighboring countries.
Just how are the refugees living in your country? Are they in camps? Are they in disused buildings in city centres?
We have 1.4 million Syrians. Maybe 110 live in refugee camps and the rest live in the wider population. There are probably 250,000 kids that are going to school. But the fact that they live under good or semi-good conditions should not make us forget two issues. There needs to be pressure to reach a settlement in Syria, which is prerequisite for all this to end, and also an emphasis on the return of the people to their countries, and that requires that we sustain them in the countries, but also sustain the countries that are hosting them. Don't want also instability in Jordan to follow from getting 25% increase in population for a country that does not even have water sufficient for its original population.
How frustrating is it when you see debate in Europe over whether a country should take 10,000 or 20,000 or 30,000 when you have in Jordan 1.5 million refugees?
Definitely from a moral point of view, it's extremely frustrating. I mean, I am asking the world to also be cognitive of the debate that goes around in the world. And when you talk about 10,000 or 5,000 or 25,000 over 3 or 4 years, a country has absorbed 1.5 million. And if something goes wrong with Damascus, we'll get another million overnight.
Well, Gareth Price-Jones is Senior Advocacy Advisor for the charity Care International, and he's currently in Jordan. He told me more about how lives have been turned upside down.
I met with a group of refugee women this morning. One of the challenges about the life here is that people tend to see the camp life, which is actually a minority of the refugees here in Jordan. Around 85% of Jordanian refugees live outside the camps. Some of those people receive no assistance whatsoever. And even for those who do, the assistance they get has been cut and cut and cut again. So just for example, the World Food Programme cash transfer programme, which the women I was talking to today were telling me they rely on, was cut in half to just $13.50 a month in August, combined with laws that forbid them to work. So, you know, all they ask for really is the right to work because they want to support themselves. They don't want to be reliant on handouts, but that's the only option they're given. Or, of course, many of them work illegally.
And as the situation deteriorates, many more decide to undertake a treacherous, possibly, journey to Europe.
Exactly. As one of the women told me today, it's like dying slowly. So many of them would much prefer to stay here in the region where it's a bit more familiar. Many of them have visited Jordan before. You know, it's a similar culture, it's a similar environment. So they would much rather stay here, and also because they want to go home. So they want to be nearby so they can keep in touch with family and friends back in Syria, so they can keep up with the news on it, whether their house has been destroyed or whether their shop's been burnt out. And they worry that going to Europe means they would lose contact with what's happening in the region. So they really don't want to go to Europe, but they're finding it increasingly difficult to survive. And of course, bear in mind that acute as the crisis seems from Europe, 95% of the refugees are here in the region. So the numbers in Europe are tiny compared to the numbers that are here. And that puts a huge pressure on social relations and just on day-to-day survival here.
Fered Beldhaj is the World Bank's country director for the Middle East, who's at that international conference in Marseille. He told me that the response of some countries has been frustrating.
If you look at Lebanon today, a country of 4.2 million people that is hosting about 1.5 million refugees, the Lebanese government is providing for 5.5 million people and not just for the 4.2 million Lebanese citizens. This is not only an extra cost in terms of economic pressure, it is also a huge cost on the infrastructure, a huge cost on water, on sanitation, on electricity, a huge cost in terms of the education sector for Lebanon that is now forced to operate on double or triple shifts. It is a huge cost on the health sector in Lebanon. So what we are trying to do is to advocate with the international community, with donors, that what we saw coming 3 years ago is now becoming even more of a pressing emergency. And tomorrow, that pressing emergency may actually start flooding on the shores of Europe and beyond. So there is a need for everybody to look beyond the immediate pressure and emergency, to look beyond what's happening immediately and right now, and to project ourselves 2-3 years down the road so that we frankly avoid what everybody sees coming as an incredible catastrophe.
So the world, of course, does want to avoid a catastrophe. But what can you as the World Bank do? How can you try and bring international communities together? In what way will you try and raise funds to stop that happening?
First, we need to move from looking at this situation as a humanitarian catastrophe and appreciate the fact that it has morphed into a development issue. In average, refugees stay in the country that has welcomed them between 15 and 17 years. That is an international average. Obviously, we are not talking about an emergency anymore. We are not talking about an ad hoc situation anymore. We are talking about a development issue that needs to be managed and dealt with through a development lens. So what we are doing is trying to gather financing, either through grants, and we are really going door to door, talking to donors and to partners, trying to, you know, raise everybody's awareness to the need of these countries to get what one could call free money. In fact, it is basically reimbursing them for a global public good that they are providing the whole world. The best solution would be obviously for all of us to provide these countries with grant money and provide them with support. But if that cannot happen, or if that can happen only partially, we need to find new solutions. And the new solution, in our view, is to blend lending with grant money and make this financing more palatable.
And what about the other countries in the region, for example, in the United Arab Emirates? What pressure is the World Bank putting on the UAE to help out?
We are interacting with them, trying to see to what extent they can lend support economically to Jordan, to Lebanon and other countries suffering from the impact of the Syrian refugees. And we are hoping that they will be joining the table when we talk about the concessional financing that I've been referring to earlier.
And that was Fered Beldhaj from the World Bank.